So tonight is awkward sex talk night, which means it's going to be all kinds of fun. I brought these sunglasses in case it gets too awkward and I can't look you in the eye anymore. I'll put the sunglasses on, and that means it's probably about to get real bad. Luckily, my wife isn't here tonight. That means I can say all kinds of stuff and not be embarrassed. So who knows where we're going tonight? It could get real interesting. But with that, we're still going to take questions, so if you can text those in. I have the phone number. It's my phone this time. I don't know who I'm going to answer questions with. Maybe it'll just be me, which is also, once again, very, very dangerous. With that, let's just dive into awkward sex talk time. There's just the one. Just leave that up. All right, if you can see this, which you can't, it says my phone number right there. We'll see what happens. Anyway, I'll pray. We'll dive in. Dear Lord, as we talk about this, we talk about something that affects all of our lives. We all have a sex drive, something we're all interested in, hopefully. Help us to address it the way you address it. Think about it the way you think about it. Have our minds change to be more like your mind and not the way our world thinks about it, and not the way a bunch of weirdo Christians who are nothing to do with the Bible, not the way they think about it, but the way you think about it. In your name we pray. Amen. So with that, in that video clip I showed, he laid out a whole bunch of statistics about how our culture is completely and totally obsessed with sex. And these statistics pretty clearly point out that a lot of people kind of use sex as its own religion. We spend all of our money towards it. We spend all of our time looking at porn on the internet. And that's where our attention goes. A whole lot of people in our culture are really, really, really messed up seeking after sex. And it's just blatantly obvious. I mean, I looked up some more statistics beyond the ones he mentioned. So, for example, in 2003, 40%, 47% of high school students and 62% of graduating seniors reported having had sexual intercourse. Couples who had sex before marriage are more likely to get divorced, according to one study. The more promiscuous you are before marriage, the more likely you are to commit adultery. I mean, there's just so many statistics about sex and how it kind of messes up your life, but people continue to pursue after it. I mean, just yesterday I was listening to the radio, I guess it was 96.7, I think, and they had like one of these little clips from their radio show in the morning. And the clip went something like this. Yeah, my friend hooked up with this guy the other day, and she woke up the next morning, and she'd slept with the guy, and she had a weird like fungus growing on her face. And what happened is, I guess they were doing it, and she bit him on the lip, and this guy, or he bit her on the lip, and this guy was so nasty, it gave her a bunch of infections. And it was like, this was the big joke on the radio, like, ah ha ha, these people are so sick and stupid, they're sleeping with germ-infested people and getting fungus on their face. Oh man, that's so funny. Like, that's our culture, where that's like the big funny knee-snapping joke on the radio that's broadcast for everybody in the middle of the day. That's kind of the world we live in, and sometimes people overstate and indicate the world's just getting worse and worse and worse. That's not always true. In fact, actually, a lot of statistics about sex say that you guys, your generation, is doing better than my generation at not sleeping with each other in high school, which is promising, unless if you're getting pregnant, less of you are getting abortions, which is encouraging. But the numbers are still ridiculously high. It's not that you're not doing it, you're just doing it slightly less than my generation or her generation. But it's still going on. And our world so often views sex as a religion. It's something that they're pursuing like it's the most important thing. So, for example, I had a Joel track this down for me, a copy of Men's Health magazine. And you'll see right here, one of the articles, it says, sex with someone new every night. So the goal is just pick somebody new, how you can find a new girl to sleep with every single night. Wow, that's pleasant to hear about, that they're training people to be sexual predators and take advantage of you ladies. I am so pumped that they're doing that. That's so exciting for me. So, I mean, that's the culture we live in, that's promoted. This is one of the most popular magazines for guys. And that's the message. Go get sex and go get rich and famous so you can have more sex with more ladies that are more attractive and have more money. So that's really the goal in life, really. That's what that magazine pretty much teaches. Every single issue, more sex secrets, more and more and more. Every month. So Christians, being the way we are, we decided to go in the opposite direction, and the response was, sex is gross. This is our gross symbol. This has nothing to do with sex. But so this is our symbol for gross because it is gross. So many Christians take it that way, and they go, sex is weird, and it's awkward, and stay away from it. Sex is gross. So, for example, the book of Song of Solomon, if you've ever read it, it's blatantly about sex. You just open it up, and like, there's no other way to read this. It's people kissing each other. It's a guy sweet-talking a lady. They get married, and then they do it, and he describes her body parts in great detail and metaphors. I mean, he's just blatantly about sex. Well, a bunch of conservative Christians that didn't know how to respond to this decided they didn't like that, and so they interpreted things differently. So, for example, when it talks about her two breasts, in the passage, a lot of commentators have said that one breast describes the Old Testament and the other one describes the New Testament. So it makes more sense that way. I mean, other people have interpreted, this isn't a book about a couple, this is a book about Jesus and the church. So it's not about two people doing it, it's about Jesus and the church doing it. That interpretation, I'm not sure where this is going, but if the Song of Solomon is about Jesus and the church is people, and I'm a people, and I'm a part of the church, that's about Jesus doing this to me. What? Okay, you got to be kidding me. How can you possibly read this book and come up with that interpretation? It's clearly not about that. So that doesn't seem to quite make sense. Other people, one commentator said, you cannot read this passage in churches. This passage is not appropriate for the church. Thus saying, there's parts of the Bible too spiritual for church. Which is completely ridiculous. The idea that you can't read the Bible in church. Maybe you don't read it to the second graders. Okay, I get that. But you can't read it to adults in church? That's crazy. And so many Christians have got this wacky idea, and so many parents, maybe some of your parents, didn't have a clue how to respond to it, so they came up with the solution of, I just won't do anything with it, I won't talk about it, I won't teach you about it, and so you have a class in school about it, and then you kind of accidentally discovered on the internet, as that little quip mentioned, most of you probably accidentally discovered internet porn when you were 11, and who knows if it stopped there, but so you discover it then, and that's where you find out about this stuff. 4 years later, your parents naively have a conversation with you where they say, don't do it. Don't do it. You're not supposed to do it. Please don't do it. And that's all they say. And then from there, you're supposed to kind of figure out if, you know, something. And then some of you start experimenting with friends. And that's kind of the way it goes for a lot of people. So the message that's told to girls often is, sex is gross, it's nasty, it's unpleasant, save it for your husbands. What? What? It's nasty, it's gross, save it for your husbands. And the other message, the follow-up is then, well, you don't want to do this, it's unpleasant, you got to put up with it, you got to give it to your husband, he's going to want it, you're going to hate it, so whatever. I mean, just stay. Give him a little bit so he's happy, but that's about it. That's the message a lot of girls get communicated, and so all of a sudden they get these really, really crazy ideas. So, for example, a girl at the Bible college I went to, my wife was having a conversation with her, and their sex came up, and they're talking about expectations and what they had in mind when they get married and all this stuff. And this girl says, you know, I don't really ever want to have sex. It's weird and nasty and gross, and I don't know about that. Really, when I get married, my plan is to, you know, have like a roommate for about 5 years, and then maybe we can try something. Like, I can tell you right now, if Jennifer had pulled that one on me, we would have gotten that thing annulled. Like, if we get married and she goes, yeah, I don't want to do it for about 5 years. Like, okay, next. This isn't happening. We have not consummated this thing. We can still get it annulled. We're not one flesh yet. Bye-bye. And she could then reimburse me for any money I paid, because that would be ridiculous if she tried to pull that on me. But, I mean, I and this girl's actually gotten married since then, which is, I don't know what to do with that poor, poor guy. I know another couple, they got married and they didn't do it for a month because she was just so weird about it. And she's like, I don't think so. They waited a month. Let's see, another one. They didn't have sex. I know a person that said you should not, absolutely not have sex on your honeymoon because you're being selfish. It should be about God. And so you need to give that up, give it to God. And you get married, the honeymoon, that should be a time for you to hang out, wait till the honeymoon's over, and then maybe you can do it. But, I mean, just going ahead and doing it that night, that's a selfish thing to do, and you shouldn't do that. What? Last one, there was a girl, I heard a story about a couple of Bible colleges. Well, like I said, Christians are lots of weirdos, lots and lots of weird Christians with absolutely, completely unbiblical views about sex. So, for example, got married, they had sex, the girl freaks out, doesn't talk to her husband for the rest of the honeymoon. She's just so weirded out, like sits in the corner, reads books, the honeymoon, and he's like still talking to her, like she's not acting like a psychopath. He's like, hey, how's it going? You gonna hang out with me? Just keeps reading a book, and it was like a whole month of her being a nut job before she kind of popped out and was like, okay, I just got weirded out on our honeymoon. We can continue now. It's okay. I'm better now. Because she was such a weirdo when it came to sex. And that's the message girls get. It's gross. It's nasty. It's unpleasant. Save it for your husband. He's going to want it. You're not going to want it. Just put up with it. And then so many women, they get married and they literally have no sex drive. None at all. And they have all these weird mixed messages and... That's so often what happens, and it's the sex is gross model. And the message that guys get is a little bit different. The message is, don't do it, stay away from it, flee it. You got to stay away from it as much as possible. Get married, make up for lost time. I mean, you're going to get married, and it's four times a day. I mean, it's just going to be in and out of the bedroom. You're going to consecrate every room of your house. You don't want to go visit a married couple the first year they've been married because they've just done it everywhere, and that's just what marriage is like. I've been married over 2 years now, and it's not quite like that. If you're thinking, man, I've been struggling with lust, and I can't wait till I get married, and we're just gonna go at it, and we're just gonna keep doing it all day long. Why wouldn't you keep doing it all? It's not quite like that. If that's your expectation, you're gonna be really disappointed when you get married, and you don't even do that on the honeymoon. So, if you're waiting for that, it's not quite coming. With that, so what's the correct view? It's not God. It's not gross. You don't get to do it all the time, every day, in your free time. It's just like, I'm going to go home tonight, and Jennifer's going to be there, and we're going to do it, then we're going to go to bed, wake up, do it before she goes to work. She'll come home, we'll do it, we'll eat dinner, do it a couple more times, watch a movie, do it again, and go to bed, wake up in the morning, and start over. It's never quite worked that way. Now, it'd be impressive if it was. We'd have remarkable amounts of stamina, but it might be a challenge. Hey, Jennifer, want to try this? Our small group is going through the Song of Solomon, so maybe we should. But if it's not that, it's something else. What it is it's a gift from God. So some people get this idea that, you know, sex with the people that think that sex is gross, they get the idea that like sex was invented in a porn shop in a dark alley and there's a bunch of sick people that came up with this idea of sex. And I don't know what they thought the Garden of Eden was like. Like Adam and Eve are in the garden, they're naked, God walks around the corner, he's like, what are you doing, Adam? Get off of her! And he walks over and he starts kicking Adam, get off of her! Stop it! Probably didn't happen like that. In fact, if you read Genesis and Genesis 2, what it says is some of the first commands given to Adam and Eve, it's be fruitful and multiply. That was his command to these naked people. Be fruitful, be multiply, and become one flesh. Go at it. Break. Go at it. Just do your best. As many as possible. Just keep multiplying. Keep doing it. That was God's command. And it's not like way down the list. I mean, there's hundreds of commands in the Old Testament. It's not like number 768. No, it's like number 2. Second things he tells them is go and do it. make lots of babies. God invented sex for married couples. God invented it. So if your mindset is it's gross or it's God, you got it wrong. God is God. But he gave us this gift for married couples. So then the question is, what exactly is the purpose? What is the purpose of sex? So on your handouts, I guess they haven't been quite passed around. They're on your tables there if you want to pass them out. The first purpose of sex is pleasure. If God didn't intend it for pleasure, he probably wouldn't have made it pleasurable. I suspect God, being all wise, having all knowledge, being a really smart guy, would figure out if he doesn't want something to be pleasurable, it won't be pleasurable. So the first purpose is pleasure. And you read the Song of Solomon. Like I said, we're going to keep referencing the Song of Solomon. You read it. What you keep finding is these two people, they're married. They really like each other's bodies. They really like each other. They keep having fun together, doing all sorts of fun stuff with each other's bodies. And what you don't ever find in the book of the Song of Solomon is babies. He doesn't say, oh, and I will enjoy you, my beautiful lady, so that your wonderful birthing hips can produce a child that will come forth from between your legs, and I will take this baby. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. There's a whole book about sex, and it forgets to mention babies. So all these people that think sex is about babies, that's all it's about, is about babies. Sorry, the Song of Solomon clearly is not talking about babies. It's about two married people that just really, really like doing each other. I mean, they're really into it, and they wrote a lot of poems about it. It is not at all about making babies. Though, the flip side is that it is one of the purposes of it. But with that, I mean, there were some Puritans. I heard in a sermon talking about, this guy was talking about the Puritans, and he said the Puritans were so serious about their sex that, like, if a guy wasn't pleasing his wife enough, that was like cause for church discipline. It's like, I mean, the 1 Corinthians 7 says you're supposed to take care of each other's needs, and you're not taking care of your wife's needs, and this is an issue for church discipline. And that was what the guy got in trouble for, not having sex enough. So people think about the Puritans, and they think that they're just a bunch of prudish group of people. Not quite. They also like to have their fun in the sack as well. So, but the problem is, if you don't think it's for pleasure, you get all sorts of weird, weird theologies. First off, you get the Song of Solomon, doesn't make any sense, and it's this weird allegory that's sick and perverse that doesn't make any sense. You get these ideas, why did God make this pleasurable thing that you're not supposed to enjoy? That's kind of stupid. So first purpose, pleasure. Very blatantly, sex is about pleasure. If you don't think so, you've lost your mind. Second one, second purpose of sex, babies. So it's not the only purpose, but one of the purposes is to make babies. Hopefully you've taken the class where they teach you how this works. I'm not going to tell you how it works, but there's a way it works where the guy does something and then something happens in the girl, and then 9 months later you get a baby. It keeps happening in our small group a lot. But so it's one of the purposes. It says in Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. So he's telling them from the get-go, go make babies by doing it. Just be fruitful, get it done, bring us some babies. Third purpose of sex, and this is one we're going to camp out on a little bit. Third purpose, oneness. It says in Genesis 2:4, for this reason a man will leave his father, actually it's not verse 4, I don't know why it says verse 4. For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. So you get married, you're united, you have sex, and the Bible says, the phrasing is, you become one flesh. You become one. So as sinners and as people, we're broken, we're insecure, and we're lonely. Most people, if you get down to it, they'll say that they're lonely. Something's not quite right. They don't feel completely fulfilled in this life. We're meant to have companions. And it even says that in Genesis. It says, I will make you a suitable helper. Because the man was not good for him to be alone. And so he's specifically the woman was created to complete him. And that, I don't mean to be cliche, and like in Jerry Maguire it says, "You complete me." It's cliche, but hey, it's biblical too. So they didn't know that when they wrote Jerry Maguire, but hey, they were being biblical. But so the idea is that they become one flesh, and the way we're the image of God, in some way, that's more fully realized through marriage, through sex. We become one flesh. We become complete. You become something more than what you were before. And that's one of the reasons why premarital sex is so damaging to people. Because you become one with someone you're not one with. You're not committed to them. You're not married to them. But you go off and you doodly-doo, and all of a sudden you become one flesh. But you're not one. You're two. You're not committed. You're not saying, "I'm going to stay with you. I got one of these rings. I'm committed to you until I die." You don't have that. All you have is this connection through sex. And so all of a sudden, bad relationships are attracted to one another because they're having sex and they enjoy it. And good couples, or people that really do care about each other, have sex, and all of a sudden they become distant because they've got this thing that's kind of tying them together in the wrong way too early when they're not committed yet. So if you're having premarital sex, what happens is it just messes everything up. You get attracted to the wrong person, you get distanced from the right person because of this powerful thing that joins you with someone, but it's only supposed to be joined together. You're only supposed to be one when you've committed yourself and you've said, "I love you, I want to be with you forever," and then it's the thing that seals the deal. It ties it all together. All right, I looked up some statistics on sex and how satisfied people are with their sex lives. And this is what it said. People who are married and they've only had one spouse, they've only ever slept with their spouse, are 84.8% satisfied with their sex life. People, and then so that's 84% satisfied, you're married, you've only had sex with this one person. And then it came up with a number for people who are cohabitating and they've had multiple partners. How satisfied are they? 57.9%. There's a 30% difference there. People that have committed and they said, "I'm with you for my life, I'm only going to do you." And I don't mean to point at Kyle Whatley, that's awkward. I'll point at the exit sign. "I'm only going to be with you." Those people are 85% satisfied with their sex life. The people that are living the life, the people that are having sex with someone new every night, those people, they're only like 55% satisfied. Half the people are like, "You know, this sex thing that I'm doing all the time with all kinds of people that I meet everywhere and anyone I can meet, that's not so great. I guess it's fun, but it's not that great." The people that actually have that oneness, that are committed, 85%. You see something there. And another thing, another observation, like he mentioned in that video, that people that have been sexually abused, just statistically, I mean, it's just through the roof. Those people are more likely to get into prostitution, the porn industry, and just have weird, screwed up sexual addictions. I mean, just through the roof. And the quote from the prostitute was, "Incest is boot camp for prostitution." Well, why is that? Well, it's the people that are most broken. They're looking for oneness. They're looking for completeness, and they keep looking for it in all the wrong places. So they go to sex, which makes them feel like one temporarily. It gives them what they're wanting temporarily, but then it's over with. And once it's over with, you're going to feel even more lonely, more empty, because you touched on something you weren't supposed to have. You became one with someone, and it didn't last, and it was broken immediately. As soon as it ends, it's broken. So this lonely and broken person is even more lonely and broken, and the cycle continues. They keep looking for something, and they keep looking to sex outside of marriage. And it's a cycle that continues over and over and over again. So one of the main purposes of sex is oneness. To join a husband and wife as one. The thing that seals the deal. I'm committed to you, and we are one. If you become one with a bunch of people, you got a big mess on your hands. That's why so many people are getting divorced. So many people have miserable marriages. So many people get married and then they have an affair. It's because they don't understand it's for oneness, and you can only become one with one other person and at work. Next one on your list. Fourth reason, purpose, it's knowledge. You look in the Bible, and it starts, the way it talks about sex, their euphemism, the one in the word in the Bible, is know. So we'll say, this guy knew this girl. Abraham knew Sarah, and 9 months later, Seth was born. It talks about, it uses this word know, because if you get in the bedroom with somebody and you start, you get married and you start doing this stuff, you everything comes out. You know everything about this person. You know the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's one of the other problems is when you have premarital sex. If sex is supposed to be for knowledge and you're supposed to be growing closer to this person, you're in this relationship and you're touching on things you're supposed to not be touching on, you run into problems. You can't talk about stuff because this thing's kind of in the way. You can't talk about previous past sins because you're in the middle of sin. And so you can't grow closer. You can't get that knowledge you're supposed to have because it becomes the barrier to knowledge when it's supposed to provide knowledge, make you grow closer together. Fifth one. Fifth reason, fifth purpose for sex, comfort. 2 Samuel 12, it's the passage where David, King David, he basically sees a lady, he likes her, he calls for her, he has sex with her, gets her pregnant. She's married, so he had an affair. She's pregnant, and so he has to kill off the guy's husband. And this next chapter, basically what happens, God catches him, and the baby that was supposed to be born from this lady ends up dying. And so they're both just absolutely mourning. They're sad. They're like, our baby died. And this is what it says in verse 24. Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and he went to her and lay with her. Lay with her probably wasn't a nap. It's a euphemism once again for sex. That's how he comforted her. And it's one of those things you won't understand until you get married, but sometimes when you're having a bad day, it's nice to roll around in the sack a little bit. Like, hey, I'm having a bad day. Oh, I've got an idea. I know it can cheer you up. And then, wow, wow, wow. And then, that is what marriage is like a little bit. But so, I mean, it's something used to comfort people. You have a bad day. Hey, let's go do this. Yeah, that is a good idea. That would make me feel better. Yeah, let's go do it. And so it's used for comfort. It can comfort you in bad times and hard times and help you through tough times. Next one on here, this next one, the sixth purpose, sex is for protection. Say, what's that? What do you mean sex is for protection? I mean, two things by that. First one, married people need to have sex. In fact, I will say married people are commanded to have sex. This is what it says in 1 Corinthians 7. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife. So, there's a verse right there, guys. When you're married, your job, you are commanded by Scripture to fulfill your wife and have sex with her. It's commanded in Scripture, blatantly. And with that, understand this, we're biblical literists, so when it says you must fulfill your marital duties, we take that seriously, and we're going to put the fun back into fundamentalism. So, I mean, we're very serious that, you know, you need to go do this. So that's what it says. Husbands, fulfill your marital duty to your wife. And likewise, the wife to her husband. So, ladies, when you're married, part of your job is to keep him satisfied in the bedroom. You're supposed to satisfy each other. Verse 4. Verse 4, the wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but to his wife. Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. In the Bible, it blatantly states, if you are married, you cannot stop having sex unless you make a commitment. We're going to stop to pray. That's in the Bible. And you say, well, I never heard that passage taught before. Just open your Bible, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It's right there at the beginning. If you're married, you're supposed to have sex. And the reason for it says in the passage, It's because if you guys are far away from each other and you're not doing that, that leaves all kind of room for Satan to come in and tempt either one of you to be attracted to someone else, turn to things like pornography, turn to things like having an affair. So if you're way far away from each other in the bed, Satan can sneak in between you. But if you're next close to each other having sex, there's no room for Satan to sneak in there. That's pretty much straight from the Bible. You are commanded to have sex, which, guys, that's where your plan to just keep doing it four times a day. Hey, there's a Bible verse that says it, so there is some hope there. But with that, the other part of this is so many people will say, hey, it's my body, I can do whatever I want with it. Not quite. I mean, people will have affairs and they'll say, hey, it's my body, I'm just having fun, it doesn't affect anybody else. I mean, my dad cheated on my mother, and he ended up marrying the woman he had an affair with. And it was like for years he couldn't figure out why we were angry. It's like, you know, I did something I thought was best for me at the time. It was fun. I had a good time. I went after this lady. What's the big deal? Why are you guys so worked up about this? Dad, are you nuts? You screwed us up for life. I'm scarred for life. You've scarred my mother for life. It's not just your body. It's not just your life. Your life affects other people. So when people say, well, it's just my body, I can do whatever I want, not quite. It doesn't quite work that way. Your life affects other people. And you're married, it's not your body, it's their body too. And for that matter, it's God's body because He paid a price to redeem you. So, hey, it's His too, in a different sense. So with that, when you're married, you need to have sex to protect the other person from falling into sin. But the misconception there is, I say, well, you're supposed to keep having sex, and so then the perception is that the guy then says, hey, woman, get in the bedroom, it's time to do it. Like, come on now, we got to go do it. And then, yeah, woman, it's your job. You get in the kitchen, and then you go to the bedroom, and that's what you do when you're not doing the laundry. Not quite. You know, if that's the way you grow up and you interpret what I'm saying, you missed it by a lot. That's not quite where I'm going with this. Because sex is more than just in the bedroom, woman. It's more than just the rolling in the sack. Sexuality extends beyond that. And so the second part of this, the way you're supposed to protect one another, is that married couples must seduce each other. Say, what? What do you mean by that? Well, it's not all about rolling in the sack. There's more to it. There's an art to it. That's where the Song of Solomon will come in, and that's where I'm going to pull out my glasses. So with this, guys, they think about it in this mechanical sense, and they just want to do it. Girls have a little bit more to it. They want more to it. That's where girls read romance novels and guys don't? Girls are looking for something a little bit more than what guys are looking for. So, for example, you read Song of Solomon, and this is going to be fun and exciting stuff. This is how the guy, or Solomon, in the Song of Solomon, seduces the lady. This is what he says to her. This is the build-up to them having sex. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. When I say this stuff to Jennifer, she just goes crazy when I compare her to goats. I mean, she just absolutely loves that. But the idea is, and so he's complimenting her. And he notices she's beautiful, and she is his standard of beauty. He just looks at her, and she's beautiful, and he tells her something that most guys have a hard time doing, such as me. Verse 2, your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, and not one of them is alone. None of her teeth are missing. Isn't that wonderful? She's not from Alabama. That's great. 3, verse 3, your lips are like scarlet ribbon, your mouth is lovely, your temples behind your veil are like halves of pomegranates. That he really does know how to talk her up. Verse 5, whew! I've got the glasses on. Your breasts are like two fawns. Like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among lilies. So, I don't go hunting, but when you go hunting, you don't go up to the deer with your Uzi and start screaming and jump out like Rambo and, ah! And just, that's not how you go hunting. If you could. Oh, you came in at just the right time. That's not how you go hunting. So that's the analogy. When you go hunting, it's like this quiet, silent caress, and it's like an art form, and you have to be quiet and sneak up. That's how he goes after her breasts. That's the way he goes. Hey, Jennifer, that's how's it going? He compares them to these fawns and gazelles that you can't just go up and go, ah! Notice the hand gesture. Ah! You can't do that. You don't do that. It doesn't work. It's not just honk, honk. It's something nice and you caress, and it's something not quite like that. I got the glasses on. The glasses are on so I can say this, Jennifer. That's what they're for, so I can say stuff like this. Verse 7. All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. Well, ladies, wouldn't you like that if you had a guy that, when he saw you, he literally said, I see no flaw in you. All I want is you for all my life. That's where these Twilight books came out, and girls go gaga over them, and a few guys read them, but it's really like the ladies. I went and saw Twilight when it came out at a midnight showing, not because I read the books, but because my wife read the book. We show up, there's two guys in the theater, me and a guy in a Darth Vader costume. I mean, girls go crazy about this stuff. Why? Because there's this guy named Eddie who's got his eyes... This guy named Eddie who's got his eyes fixed on one girl. Eyes are fixed on one girl, and to him, she is perfect, and he will do anything to have her for his life. He's a one-woman man, and he is dedicated, he's devoted. That's what every girl wants. She wants a guy like Solomon who sees her and says, oh, beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. Like I said, sex isn't about you just show up and, ah, let's go do it, baby. And get in the bedroom. There's an art to it. So one part is you don't deprive each other. The other part is you're supposed to seduce one another. Continues on. Verse 9. You have stolen my heart. If you thought Dashboard Confessional came up with that line, he just stole it from Solomon. You have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes, with the jewel of your necklace. How much more pleasing is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your perfume than any spice. Passage over, glasses off. He seduced her. He didn't just go, oh, bedroom woman. Song of Solomon would be quite short if that was his approach. He didn't do that. He had the, I'm going to talk to her. I really love her, and I'm going to tell her how much I love her. I'm going to tell her how beautiful she is, and I'm going to go meet her in the bedroom, and we're going to have all kinds of fun with her clusters. But so if you look at it, I made a list of things he did. He finds her attractive. He builds her up. He gives her compliments. He brings out the best of her. He expresses his feelings, and he protects her. And in response, if you read the book, she says some very exciting things to him that every guy wants their wife to say to them. So with that, sex is for protection. It keeps you away from lust, and that means you have to do it. You can't do the we're not going to have sex for 5 years thing. That's not going to fly, and it's blatantly unbiblical. And if you try the no sex for 5 years, you're in sin. Blatantly. I'm telling you right now, that is sinful to do that. Bible says you must keep each other satisfied, and if neither one of you have a sex drive, you need to go to a doctor because you've got a hormone imbalance and something's wrong with you. You're not designed to be like that. And you're also supposed to protect you by making you a one-woman man or a one-man girl. You're supposed to seduce one another, have eyes only for each other. You're supposed to tell each other, supposed to woo one each other, and that's supposed to be the build-up to the rolling in the sack, or the woo-woo-wee-wee-wow-wow-wow stuff in the bedroom. Final passage, final purpose for sex. Sex is for worship. What? Sex is for worship. I thought you said, where is it? Sex is God is bad. You said that is bad, so how are you saying sex is worship? Well, like I said, God also invented sex. It was his idea. He didn't sneak in the garden and get surprised by Adam's actions. He invented it. And this is what it says in Ephesians 5, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ in the church. So that whole thing about the Jesus in the church, there actually is something to that. Marriage is the metaphor used in the Bible for Christ in the church. The church is called the bride of Christ, and so there's something about sex, there's something about marriage that models Christ's relationship to the church. And so when a married couple comes together, and two people that bear the image of God come together as one flesh, and they're united in love and harmony and with commitment, that is an relationship. It's something that mirrors Christ's relation to the church. And you say, that's weird, and I don't quite get that. And the passage stated that. Verse 32 says, this is a profound mystery. Paul's writing this, and he says, I don't quite get it. I'm not sure exactly what this means. But this oneness of the flesh, that's the mirror. That's what Christ in the church looks like. Christ loved the church. Husbands, you're supposed to love your wives. You're supposed to be united as one, as Christ is united with His church. So when a married couple has sex and it's not the mechanical, get in there, woman, we're doing it. When it's not that, and it's like actually loving, caring, coming together as one, that's an act of worship. But the flip of that is premarital sex. When people come together and they pervert this thing, and it comes together in sex to create oneness, when it's not oneness, it's two-ness, faking oneness. When they come together and it's two image bearers that aren't supposed to be together, you got a big problem. Because that's not the image of the church. That's an image of idolatry and perversion. That's why it's so important that you save it for marriage. It's not just, well, you'll get a disease and something will fall off and you'll have problems. It's not that. And it's not just, you'll get pregnant and you'll mess up your life. That's true. You will, might. But it's not just that. And so this is something that's supposed to model Christ's relationship to the church. It's supposed to be a beautiful thing, symbolizing oneness. It's not just a good time. It's a beautiful thing God gave us as a gift, meant as an act of worship to Him. So as we kind of close, there's not really an application I can't say to all of you, because as far as I know, none of you are married. I can't tell you, go be doers of the Word. Don't just hear the Word, go do the Word, because if you were to go and do this, you'd be violating what I just told you not to do. Jennifer and I, we can go home tonight, and we can be doers of the Word here, have a worship service at home. We can do that. You guys can't. So with this, I mean, this talk very much is just kind of informational. Because so many people aren't talking about it. They're doing the sex is gross version. And they're not talking about it. They don't give you the information. They just say, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Girls, save it for your husbands. It's nasty, but save it for him. Guys, just save it, don't do it. Get married, make up for lost time. That's what people are telling you. They're not giving you all the other stuff. The story behind it. There's more to it. There's a reason you save it. It's because it's supposed to symbolize oneness. And you can't have oneness when you're not one. You don't have one of these rings that symbolizes you've come together, you love it, you love one another, and you're committed to one another. So I'm going to pray. I got another video clip. We'll do some Q&A. And we'll sing a couple songs, and then we'll end like 20 minutes late as usual. Dear Lord, as we talk on this, thank you for helping people to show maturity. Hopefully I spoke clearly so they figured out what I was saying. Let your word be alive in these people and help them to change their minds. Help them to be renewed by your word and be changed so they don't see sex the way that the world sees it. They don't see it the way the wacko Christians that think it's gross see it. Help them to see it the way you see it, as a wonderful gift for marriage that symbolizes your relationship to the church, something that's meant for oneness and for worship. And help them to have self-control in their relationships and show wisdom. God, help all this time to be for you and for your glory. In your name we pray. Amen.